Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 25th, 2011. You're listening to the best PokerCast apparently no one's ever heard of. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
You read the things that people write about you sometimes. You're just like, really? Really, you've never heard of our show? 6 years? You know, come on. I don't believe it.
I don't know. I wouldn't have heard of our show if it wasn't for you.
Yeah, that's true.
Not everybody sits around searching for poker podcasts all day.
But it was nice on the forum threads this week. A few people contributed some stuff in there just saying how much they enjoy the show, and that's what makes it all worth it for me. And I just want to thank everybody again for giving us some support, especially when there's people out there ragging on us. So, appreciate it.
Yeah, they came up in the Ante Up Home Games game last night I was playing, and they asked whether your head was going to be able to fit through the studio today after all that adulation. And, of course, I reminded them that we ripped the door off of the hinges long ago. So don't worry about that. Make Chris's head bigger as possible. We'll get him in. Don't worry.
Last night was the 8-game mix, right?
Yeah.
How'd you do?
Not good.
Oh.
But I was multi-tabling. You can't multi-table when you play 8 games.
No, no way, dude. No way.
Well, we'll talk about that in our main topic, which should be pretty interesting today, I think.
Okay, cool.
Unlike normally, when we're just completely boring.
It's okay. No one hears us anyway, so we can do whatever we want in the main show because no one actually is listening.
Well, I tried to make this last tournament I played boring. But despite my best efforts, I ended up making it a wild ride during one hand.
Is this a land-based tournament, or is this an online tournament?
Land-based, yes, okay. Yes. I just realized I ended my streak of final tables.
Oh, no!
I guess that's what happens when you get in a tournament with, like, 130-some people.
Yeah, I was going to say, it must be people more than 20 in the tournament, then. I
actually got to wade through a lot of people. It's probably bigger than the main event now. I saved myself with this hand. I was had about 9,000 in chips, which is down a little bit from my starting stack. And I was trying to kind of double up, try to chip up a little bit. And wouldn't you know, I looked down under the gun at 2 beautiful rockets. And I'm like, all right, this is my hand. I'm gonna double up on this hand. So I was trying to figure out how much to raise here. Blinds were 150 at the time, 75-150. And, you know, normally you do a 3X to 450. But 450 just seems like a weird bet to me.
Why?
If I could bet 449, it'd be completely different. But live, you can't do it. So I just try to make it a little easier, right? So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to round it up. It's aces, too. Can't hurt if I, you know, bet a little bit more than 3X. I'm just going to bet 500, right?
Yeah.
So I'm fiddling with my $100 chips, and I reach down and grab a pink 500 and flip it into the pot. Or not the pot, but go in front of me, right?
I know where this is going.
And then the dealer who was watching me, you know, fiddle with my chips and stuff, kind of almost begrudgingly says, "That's a call." And he actually moves on, and I'm like, oh man, it is!
Oh my god.
All these poker one-on-one courses we teach, I'm like, always verbalize your action. Just because you know how to drive now doesn't mean it's not the best way to drive at 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock.
Yep.
And here I was, not even listening to my own advice, and I ended up limping under the gun with aces. And all of a sudden, my tournament flashes before my eyes. I'm like, oh, man, now I'm going to get like 47 callers, and flop's going to come like three hearts, jack 9-10 or something. And I'm going to have to like fold this hand, and this was going to be my saving hand.
Did you just like convince yourself that there was someone really aggressive behind you that was going to raise and that you were mixing up your play like a pure poker genius? Is that how you got through the moment?
No, I went through all these beating myself up, you know, cigar burning myself. by the time I got through all that, a very nice gentleman in the four seat went ahead and raised to 600 for me.
Ah, what a nice guy.
I'm like, thank you, sir. And not only that, but another nice gentleman called his bet.
Wow.
So now I raised to 2,000. I'm like, all right, now I can get my real raise in. Both of them call. Flop comes ace, rag, rag. And I check. He makes a big bet. The other guy folds. I go all in. He calls. He has ace, king. Runs it out. Woohoo! Double up. And then some, actually, because I got a little extra from the other guy.
Wow.
For making that mistake. So sometimes, Chris, mistakes actually work out for you.
But I tell you, this show's going to have a lot of like sort of, you know, not transitional stuff that works out, but a lot of common themes, because it's funny you brought that up. There was a hand that when I played in that Daytona Beach charity event with the rabbi and his good charity, and I had pocket aces on one hand, and remember Elliot, one of our dealers, was dealing to us. He's one of our dealers from our ship. He was dealing. I made a raise with aces and got re-raised by another guy. I just smooth called, and the flop came ace high, and I bet out, and he shoved, and I called. He had ace queen. It was almost the exact same situation where top set, rag, rag, and he had case ace, and the same thing. And the reason why I bring that up is because later on our mailbag is going to involve Daytona Beach and pocket aces. It's pretty wild.
The pocket aces theme show, folks.
Tell you, we are a nip and tuck, man. We are back and forth, quality, tight show. But so, you know, I mean, there's some, you know, benefit to not raising with aces there anyway, even though you meant to.
Yeah, well, that's what I try to talk myself into is that, you know, sometimes people will limp and then, but the problem is when you limp with it and then you do the limp re-raise, then you're almost telegraphing your hand.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly what I was forced to do at that point because they raised 600. I didn't want two collars. There's a lot of chips in the pot I'll raise and, you know, at least one of them will come around. I didn't expect both of them to come around. But, yeah, so, I mean, there's worse things that, the worst mistakes you can make at the table. But it's just frustrating. And then at the end of the hand, the dealer is laughing at me. He's like, man, I totally knew what you're doing there, but it was one ship.
Yep.
I'm like, no, hey, I know. My fault. Wasn't asking you to correct my mistake for me.
And it's funny to learn. It's funny, too, that you would seek out the shortest stack method of making a raise when you could do four blacks and two greens and make a much more intimidating raise. But then again, you don't want to intimidate anybody with this. So I guess it makes sense that you want to use just one pink chip. You know?
Well, yeah, but see, it's the inverse playing live rather than online.
Yeah.
Live, I want more chips in my actual stack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not so much pushing them in the pot.
Right, because they can see the stack.
Right,
they can see the stack. Right.
And when I put like six chips out there for a 450 raise, it's not that menacing. But having like 20,000, 25 unit chips in my stack, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, that is scary. It's pretty...
Now, online, you can't see the stacks at all. So now that you do the bets, so the bet looks bigger. Trust me, folks, I am an accomplished player. I'll be teaching bet sizing for the low price of 99 cents next week.
How to make final tables and not make money by Scott Long.
At your favorite Costco.
Favorite Costco.
All right, well, we're talking about tournaments, and a long time ago, I've been meaning to talk about this on the show for a while, but we just had some good stuff. I was on the Great Poker Wars live show that you and I are on. One of those is on every Monday night.
Yep.
I've actually forced you to do the last couple nights.
Yeah, you're killing me.
We'll see how long I can get that streak going.
Yeah, this week, no chance.
And this was before we went down to the circuit event down at Palm Beach Kennel Club, which smashed all kinds of records down there, and
yeah,
it was great for you because you cashed. And they asked me, hey, Scott, how do you prepare for a tournament? And I think they specifically want to know, how do you prepare for a tournament like horse? But I think in a wider thing, how do you prepare for a tournament is a good question to ask. And I gave them probably an unexpected answer. That was, you know, you and I are just so busy with the business.
Right.
And, you know, working long hours and 6-7 days a week, that we don't really get a chance to play much poker anymore.
That's true.
It's very odd, and one of the funny things I always like to tell folks is, you know, we quit our jobs and started a poker magazine so we could play less poker. And it's the absolute truth.
It is an absolute
truth. Playing on far less poker now than I used to. So what I told him was, you know, hey, when I get a chance to actually play a tournament, particularly a live tournament, and a good live tournament, you know, with, you know, deep stacks and good structures and lots of money involved, I'm just tickled pink to actually be able to do it.
Yeah.
And I find myself a lot more calm and a lot more ready to win than I think maybe some other people who just play, have the luxury of being able to play whenever they want or as often as they want, and have to go through a different kind of preparation thing to be in the right frame of mind.
Oh, I totally agree. The other thing, too, is I seem more focused when I'm not playing all the time. When I am getting to play rarities like this, and I sit down, I think to myself, you know, I need to really concentrate on what I'm doing here because I'm not playing so much that nothing is automatic to me anymore. So I tend to focus a lot more when I do get a chance to play now these days because I don't play that often. So I seem to do better when I have these kind of breaks and long gaps in between tournaments and stuff. And I'm like you, I look forward to it. I just like to enjoy it and relax, and it seems to make me play better.
Well, I think it makes it more fun too for me, at least.
Yeah, you know?
That's one of the big drawbacks. I think we talk a lot about, you know, being the pro lifestyle and how not glamorous it really is. And I think that's got to be the one thing is anything you do 8 hours, 12 hours a day, 4 days, 5 days a week becomes a grind.
Yep.
Becomes less enjoyable, even if it was fun to begin with.
I mean, that was one of the reasons that I burnt out at the Times when we worked there was, you know, you hear about, you know, if you like sports growing up, you play sports growing up, you think, oh my God, I can make a living just writing about sports is great, or editing sports, and, you know, that's great. But you know what? I pretty much hate sports now. You know what I mean? I'm so burnt out on it that, you know, I'll watch the playoffs and stuff like that, and you know, occasionally I'll watch football games with my dad or something, but for the most part, I mean, I almost never watch like SportsCenter or anything like that because it just burns you out. And I'm glad that, I mean, I realize poker now is pretty much 90% of our lives now, but playing poker isn't. So that's the beauty of it. You know, when we finally get to sit down and play, I'm not burnt out on playing. I'm just burnt out on reading, you know, stuff and whatever. But it is. If I had to play poker all the time, I couldn't do it. There's no way.
Well, it's making me rethink. I mean, one of the little bucket list things I have is to actually go to a poker series. It doesn't have to be the World Series. It could be, you know, a smaller series in a local room or circuit event or something, and try to play every event.
Oh, no way.
I always thought that would be cool just to go there because, you know, so many people do that. They just travel a circuit and they go. And, I mean, they maybe not play every event.
They can't play.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right. But I mean, go in there with the idea, hey, I'm just going to play this series and see how well I do. And, you know, particularly because, you know, reading our magazine and proofs, we see that, you know, some people run really good during some series.
Yeah, it happens almost every time when we get, say, something from the Beauvage or whatever in one of their big series. There's always inevitably someone who wins two or even three events in one series. And I think they say that a lot on, you know, people always say that. Like even at the World Series, someone always wins two bracelets. Every year since like 2003 or whatever it is, someone has won multiple bracelets, and it's never been a year since that someone hasn't. So, yeah, people just run really well at certain times, and they just, things are working for them, and I don't know, maybe it's the poker gods or karma or something, but yeah, I'd like to see, I mean, I'd like to give it a shot. Obviously, my bankroll couldn't afford it, but if someone wanted to put me in a series of events, I'd give it a shot and see how I did.
Yeah, but I guess my point now is that I don't know whether I'd enjoy it, even though it's something I want to do.
Well, I think if you did it once, you'd enjoy it. As long as you knew you didn't have to do it again next week, you know, you'd probably still enjoy it.
Yeah, right.
I think. I mean,
kind of like the Amazing Race challenges.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to do that the rest of your life, but if you do it for one episode or one season, that's, you know, that you can handle it. I don't think I can handle it with you, but, you know, you can handle it. But I also think, you know, you've asked the question. I think that people, if they don't or aren't familiar with our magazine, Dr. Steve Bloomfield has put out a lot of stuff about preparing for a tournament, at least mentally and a little bit physically too. Some of the things that you should do to, if it's going to be like a long tournament, you know, if you're entering a larger buy-in or something, a lot of stuff that you may not think of. he's written a series of stuff like that, and you can just catch it all on antiupmagazine.com in our archives, or even just in our straight features items. You can search, scroll back, and find all of his articles there. He's done some pretty good stuff about how to prepare, so take that into consideration if you do want the answer to that question. He's got the best answer, I think. I mean, I don't really prepare for him. You know, I just show up and play. I mean, the best thing I can really, you know, you're not gonna change your game overnight. You know what I mean? You're gonna have the same game when you show up. What I did for the horse thing was I think I may have mentioned on the show or not, but I read that Full Tilt Poker strategy guide again. I thumbed through it the night before and got a lot of good rest. You know, I got to bed early and got some sleep and stuff. So that's what I did. But you know, I don't. If I'm just playing a regular tournament like down the street at, you know, Derby Lane or something, I'm just showing up and playing. I'm not doing anything specific.
Yeah.
One of the other things that I enjoy doing when I'm not playing poker is watching poker. I feel like I'm the TV correspondent for the NEF Nation, you know? And I don't know if you remember the Poker Lounge that they launched about a year ago.
Is this the Losers Lounge where the celebrities get knocked off and Dave Foley makes a joke about them and they go play there?
No, this is the UK filmed version of Poker After Dark. It's like Full Tilt's answer to Star's Big Game, because they have five pros or whatever it is and one amateur who qualifies online to play against them.
Do they have Jesse May?
Since I have no idea who that is,
he's all the British shows. Jesse May? You don't know who Jesse May is?
No, I have no idea.
Wow. I actually know something about TV that you don't. Probably the only thing.
And they may even have Jesse May. I don't even know. I couldn't even tell you. But I did catch a few episodes, because now they're airing on, I think it's Spike. It's either Spike or Versus, one of those channels. And I got to tell you, it was very interesting, because some things are kind of perplexing. Okay, so it's filmed in the UK, right? And they have a UK announcer. But on this episode that I watched recently, the staff had like a German tournament director and a French dealer.
So excellent.
It was like Hands Across the World poker show or something.
A little melting pot of poker.
And then not only that, but this is what really got me. And I just don't understand this. Maybe you can help me with this. You know how on Poker After Dark they have tournament chips and then they have bundles of cash, right? And of course, mm-hmm. It's in America, so they have bundles of American cash. Well, they're in the UK, and they have chips, and they have bundles of cash. But the cash is American cash. Why are they using $20,000 and not £20,000 or whatever? I don't understand that. Can you figure that out for me? Why would they use American money on a British television show?
Well, I'm going to go off the limb and say that our currency is worth crap now.
I know. It's more the more reason, right, not to use it.
Just above Zimbabwe's. So they're able to probably put more bills on the table in U.S. currency than if they just had British pounds.
You know, you're probably right. Oh, and the other thing, too, is they were sort of skimpy stacks of bills, too. Maybe they should use fewer chips and more. I don't know what it was, but... You know, I mean, God, it was so, I'm like, wait a minute. As I'm watching, I'm like, wait a minute. This is in the UK, right? I mean, you can tell it's the UK. The announcer and the host are all English. And, those are dollars, those are $100 bills. What's going on here? I couldn't figure it out. And then I'm like, are they doing an American version of it for us? And then, but no, that's the version. And one of the things I like about the show, unlike the Poker After Dark version, is they end it in one night. You know, and I have to admit, though, when Poker After Dark came out, I was like, this is great. It's going to go on for a week. We're going to get to see all the hands. But you know what? I'm kind of tired of that now. I'm glad they wrap it up in one night. I want to know who wins before I go to bed, you know? So, because I may not catch it again tomorrow, or I may have to watch 6 episodes in a row on a TiVo or whatever. So I'm kind of glad that they do that. They actually wrap it up in one night. Now, of course, there's not a lot of play on these things. But what I love about it is the dealers, they always say, pass, like when someone folds.
Excellent.
Pass, pass. And sometimes the accent is so thick, Jean turns to me, she's like, did she just say puss? I'm like, not that I know of, you know, because the accent is just so thick. But
that's almost like a Family Guy thing. They didn't say puss, and they pan to someone who's got, like, you know, liquid coming out of their arm,
leaking
or something.
Face, you know. But I did enjoy it, and I'm kind of glad that it's on, you know, so every once in a while I have a chance to watch some poker where I, you know, get some instant gratification rather than waiting a week to see who wins. But it was odd. It was like hands across the world, man. It was like UK, Germany, France, American money. It's kind of weird, but I'm enjoying it, and I'm glad there's another poker show for me to watch.
Well, hopefully some of our listeners can help us answer the Benjamin question there.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see what the truth is. That'd
it's
be cool.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre.
All right, our mailbag, as you prefaced early on in the show, is also about the lovely, beautiful hand Pocket Aces.
Yep.
And it comes from a new friend, Cy Song, or we're going to say he is, or she is.
This person is Cy Song.
Oh, boy. We don't know gender. We don't know how to pronounce. This is tough. All right. We're going to say Cy, right?
Yeah.
Here's what Cy wrote in. I played in my first World Poker Tour qualifier in Daytona Beach and came out 180th out of 199. All right. So he plays a lot like me. He says, not impressive, but I tried to replay it over and over again to see if I could have played it differently. My question to you is, what would a pro do in this situation, Chris?
Okay. So I can't answer.
Wait, he's got the wrong podcast for this.
We'll get Dan Druff on the show next week.
Apparently pros just cackle at people. All right, so he wants to know what a pro would do in this situation. So we're going to try to pretend that we're pros.
Okay.
Just for this question. He says he started with 10,000 in chips, blinds are 100, 200. He's dealt ace-ace. And raises 5x to 1,000. So he must have actually cut out real chips and not dunk it.
Nah, he didn't
like
throw out one single 10,000 chip.
All right, so he raises 5x to 1,000. Two seats behind him raises to 2,000, the always favorite min bet.
Yeah.
Everyone else folds. Gets back to our hero here, and he raises to 5,000. So once again, we're playing limit poker. And the other person goes all in and has our hero covered, Chris.
Okay.
So obviously he makes the call with the best hand. His opponent shows queen-queen. Flop is nothing, but a queen hits the turn. River's no help, and our hero is out of the tournament. So he says, I feel like I know I could have made it deep in the tournament, but not when you get kicked out so early. Yeah, I guess when you're out, you're out. But any suggestions on how to play this hand differently, Chris?
Well, my good partner Scott Long used the word obviously, so that is the answer. Obviously, he calls. Really, unless you're in a situation where, you know, 35 people are winning a seat and you only have 36 people left in the tournament, you know, maybe you consider folding. And there might even be later on in our main topic today an instance where you might consider folding this hand too. We'll talk about that later. But really, a pro would not do anything differently than fold. Than call. There's no way they fold. I mean, you know, I think I actually heard someone say once in a main event, you know, $10,000 buy-in, first hand of the tournament, guy shoves on you, you have pocket aces, what do you do? And I think someone actually tried to make an argument for folding once, but, I mean, really, I mean, what else? If you're out there to play and win with pocket aces, what are you there for? And you know, you just chalk it up to experience and you know, good story and move on. I can't imagine folding pocket aces. And if you're in a tournament that costs so much money that it makes you so nervous that you have to fold your pocket aces because you don't want to lose that hand and go out, then you shouldn't be playing in that level of a tournament anyway. So clearly this is something that you could afford to do and something you went out to try to win, and the only way you're gonna win is to play hands properly, and pocket aces pre-flop, you know, shoved, you have to call. There's no pro that folds there ever. So
yeah, I think there have been some pros that I've read that would fold pocket kings.
Yeah,
maybe on, because obviously you could be up against aces and be dominated. But aces, wow, you know, that's what you're waiting for.
Yep.
So
yep, and you know you can't be losing. So you know, I mean, there's always the luck of the, or the bad luck in this case of the flop, turn, and river. But
or bad variance, depending on what god you believe in.
We've been using that joke like for 2 weeks straight now, man.
Hasn't gotten old yet.
I'm even using it with people who don't know poker, and they look at me like, what are you talking about? You know, I'm at the store, and the lady's like, oh, that was lucky you got the penny on. You know, no, I wasn't lucky, that was variance. It's what? Nothing. Never mind. She doesn't get it, but I get a good kick out of it, so.
Oh, man. Well, Cy, we appreciate you sending it in. I know it doesn't come close to winning a World Poker Tour seat, but we're happy to send you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. And, you know, maybe you can analyze the ace ace versus queen queen and probably come to the same conclusion that we did.
Yeah. Hey, our hotline, 813-448-1120. Apparently, maybe it was disconnected or something this week. I don't know. We don't have any calls this week.
Yeah, well, you know, it's because I think what happened is a couple people emailed us and they were trying to find a tab pull from a can of tab and also a payphone and tried to call for free. And no one was able to find either of those two things, let alone two of them together.
So, you know, this is like the ultimate free-roll troller, you know, like the guys who have no money online at all, so they play in a free-roll, hoping to win a couple of pennies, and then from those pennies, turning them into a legitimate buy-in. And same thing with us, you know, they want to try to win that free t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, but they can't make the phone call. Come on, people. One of you has to have a cell phone or Skype or something.
All right, we'll remind the folks that that number is 813-448-1120. And had you have called, we would have been happy to give you a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com.
Well, we did our voice tracking this week for the second annual Chad Brown No Limit Texas Hold'em Championship.
Oh, you nailed it on the first take.
I know, dude. It's because I can read on our notes. Otherwise, I still get it wrong. But, you know, we had a lot of fun in the studio doing it, and there was some really good play. And, you know, a lot of times you watch television tournaments and the blinds are already so high that you're not really getting to see much play beyond the flop. But this tournament had a pretty good structure, and we actually got to commentate on some pretty decent play.
Yeah, and trust me, watching some of these hands like we did, realize how stupid we really are.
Yeah.
As poker players. There's the people that are really head and shoulders above us. So it was really good stuff, and we'll be happy the people will be able to get to see it. And they will be airing at 10 p.m. Eastern on April 8th and April 15th on Comcast Sports South, which is called CSS now. And if you've got the regional sports package on DirecTV or Dish, like I do, you can watch it nationwide.
Yeah.
And then also, there's been some really good Windy City Poker Champion stuff airing on Comcast Sportsnet Chicago now. Of course, Windy City and Kirk and those are the ones that helped us out with the Chad Brown event. So check that stuff out, too, if you happen to get either that network or the sports packages.
Yeah, it was really cool. I got to watch a little bit of it at your house recently, and the intro to it and everything. Now it's all jazzy up, you know, cool with some rapper singing and everything. It's really pretty cool. It's pretty exciting stuff. So I was really happy to see that. And it was all in HD, too, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, sweet.
Hey, our Apes event is Saturday, our second event of the year, No Limit Hold'em. It's noon Eastern time. The date is March 26th. So if you listen to this late, you missed it. Ha ha! all details are at antiupmagazine.com/AIPS, stands for the Antiup Intercontinental Poker Series. And then new this year, all of our winners will get a pair of Blue Shark Poker Optics, which are worth more than $100. I have a pair.
So do I. And I wear them everywhere.
Yeah, wear them at the horse event. Maybe you win the horse event. So you guys should get these glasses and wear them. They'll make you win.
Wear them on the bobsled, too.
That's right. Wear them on the Jamaican bobsled ride. Also, if you win our event, you qualify for the $2,000 Tournament of Champions free roll, all money put up by PokerStars. So don't forget our event is on PokerStars.com, and check out everything you need to know on antiupmagazine.com/apes. Hey, Scott, we have an Antiup news desk this week because, you know, we didn't have a hotline, so I want to make sure we got some news.
We got plenty of news
this
week.
All right, what's going on?
All right, the Nevada Gaming Control Board has unanimously recommended Caesars Entertainment's desire to have a relationship with subsidiaries of internet poker gaming giant 888 Holdings. This comes from the Las Vegas Sun. While it's unknown exactly what kind of relationship the two parties will share, the Sun suggests it could mean that Caesars is ready to get serious about online poker, Chris.
Man, you lost me somewhere in there, but I imagine it's exciting stuff.
Those were a lot of big words.
A lot of big words in there, buddy. Subsidiaries? I don't even know. Good thing I didn't read it, because I thought it was sub-diaries, you know? I didn't know what was going on there.
Meanwhile, South Point casino owner Michael Gogan has come out in support of Nevada's proposed intrastate poker bill, which is a rarity for a land-based casino operator, which seemed to be lining up in opposition to any kind of online poker, Chris.
You know, of all the people out there in Vegas, Michael Gogan's my favorite person, man. He's just awesome. You know, he's just awesome. He's got a huge backbone, and I love that he's doing this too. I think that it's very important. You get some people who aren't exactly, or at least their casinos aren't exactly the mainstream casinos. They start supporting it too, and might get some actual momentum from this. So, pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this with the interview with Nolan Dalla that we had a couple weeks ago. He talked about, you know, how these casino operators, you know, go out there and say, hey, allow freedom of marketplace. Let me come in and open my casino wherever I want. And then as soon as they get the casino, then they're like, oh, hey, no competitors anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little weird.
Free market's good for them until they actually get the market. Then they don't want free market anymore. Okay, let's try this again. Representative Barney Frank has reintroduced a federal online poker bill, but this time it's co-authored by Republican Representative John Campbell of California, giving it a bipartisan support. So what do you think?
Wow, I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. I really didn't think anything was going to be reintroduced for a while.
Right.
Don't really know whether it's going to get anywhere, but I guess, you know, if you can get a Republican co-sponsor, then that helps a little bit.
Sure. And I think I read a little bit of more of the article, and it said, you know, with all the states trying to do it on their own, why not just say, hey, look, they want to do it. Let's just do it and get federal money out of it, and it makes sense.
We'll see where it goes. Yeah, I don't really hope it goes somewhere. All right, and finally, Poker Road has been signed on to do the official broadcast from World Poker Tour events, producing 3 episodes at each stop, as well as occasional special episodes.
Yeah, these guys have done that before, too, or not officially in any official capacity, but they always seem to do their broadcasts from WPT events. So this is sort of like just, hey, this is what we're doing, but now we're doing it a little more officially. And, you know, I never hear much about them anymore either. I wonder why that is.
Well, I'm just happy. I'm sure they're happy that we turned down the World Poker Tour.
Yeah.
They came to Antioch and said, you know, hey, you guys really know your stuff. You guys give some real great strategy. You totally understand the whole pot equity versus pot odds situation.
Everybody in the poker world knows you.
Yeah, yeah. Can you come out and do these things? We're like, you know what? It seems a little beneath us. Yeah. We'll let the poker world guys do it.
Yeah, you know, Joe Seabach needs a job. Give it to Joe and Gavin. Gavin's got a baby now. He's got to feed another mouth. Let them have it. But, you know, we've signed on to do the official Annie Up events, so hey, you know, we always got that.
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
All right, I'm really digging this main topic today, Chris.
Me too. It's a lot different than stuff we normally offer. You know, I mean, we haven't done something like this in a while.
Yeah, we get we obviously get a lot of emails from listeners, and you know, we answer as many as we can and try to work them into the show where we can. You know, whether it's a hand of the week or you know, a mailbag or just a banter item. But sometimes we get one that's just so layered that it can't fit anywhere else other than in our main topic.
That's right.
All right, so this week, PokerStars. Actually, it's been a while. I should say this week. This week's show. But PokerStars recently changed its double or nothing sit and goes into what they call 50-50 tournaments.
Right.
Previously, the idea was that 10 players started and the final 5 split the prize pool evenly. Essentially, a heads-up match with a little less variance or luck. But now, a portion of the prize pool still goes to the final five players, but the rest of the prize pool is a portion based on final chip stacks. So players with more chips make more money.
So in other words, the sixth person, once he gets knocked out, at that point, it's chip equity.
Yeah, tournament's over. Everybody gets starts at $5 and goes up based on a percentage of the, you know, it depends on the buy-in of the tournament, but you get a certain amount of dollars or cents for every 100 chips you have.
Right. Pretty cool.
So if you have, like, one chip, you're probably going to get $5. Yeah, like, all the chips, then you're going to get a lot of money.
Yep. Pretty cool.
So, you know, before the double or nothings, you know, you essentially you could double up and just kind of sit out. You could probably technically still do that with this tournament, but you're kind of giving up a little value, I think, if you're doing that. So now there's definitely incentive to play right up until the big bone lady sings.
Jeez.
Yeah, we're trying to be politically correct here.
Oh, man. So what sparked this idea?
Ultrasweet. All right, so one of our loyal listeners, Will, from Perth, Australia.
Gotta love that.
He sent us in a couple things before, and you know what? I meant to get out my globe here, Chris, but I'm trying to think of some place that is farther away from Antiup headquarters than Perth, Australia.
You know, I'm not going to pretend that geography is my best, but I know Japan is north of there, but it's not... It's probably still a little east, right? So it's probably closer to us.
Yeah, it's a little easter.
A little more east.
And Perth is on all the way on the western side of Australia.
Yeah, yeah. No, Perth's on the eastern side, right? It's on the eastern side of Australia. Right?
No, it's west.
It's on the western side? Well, then it might be closer than Japan, right? The west side of Australia. The west side of Australia is the left side, right? So that would be closer.
This is terrible. Well, it depends on how you get there, yes.
Yeah, the west side of Australia is still... I know I'm just saying, but as far as Japan,
yes.
You could be on one side of Japan and be further
it depends
away
on which way you
closer.
Fly.
Yeah, it depends on which way you fly. Obviously, you go toward California, I guess, when you fly to Australia. So. But you
what I'm
going to
say is
coast.
If we go out after this show with two shovels and dig through the center of the earth...
We call it in China if you do that.
Pretty sure we're going to come out in Will's backyard.
I think you go to China when you do that. Sorry.
No, you wormhole from China.
Oh, okay. You wormhole from there. Okay.
All right. Now that we've lost all of our listeners.
No, they're loving this, man.
Anyhow, here's what Will sent us. He sent us a great email. He detailed a few examples of hands he's played in this format and some of the unique situations that come up. And so we're going to run through each of the situations he brought up, talk about them, which I think are a great little pocket strategy for these games, I think.
Right.
But, you know, I wanted to get a feel for these, so I played a few last night and scribbled down a few of my own notes, Chris. So
okay.
I want to share these with the ANF Nation so they can quickly forget them and be a winning player. All right, so I played two of them last night. Cashed them both. Woohoo! And then donked off my winnings in the Antiup home game. 8-game mix. But a couple things I noticed. You know, I played just a little $5 ones last night. So maybe at the higher levels, obviously, things should be a little different, you would think. But at least at the $5 level, I think I noticed that players are still playing them like the old double or nothings.
Hmm.
We're essentially just trying to get into the money and not realizing that there is a good ability to make a lot more off of these by having a big chip stack, obviously. So I think this allows an aggressive player to kind of chip up near the bubble, which is really important. You know, if you got people waiting, just clawing on the chalkboard to make the money, you can keep pushing and raising, not pushing and raising, but raising, maybe pushing, and get people to fold and keep chipping up, and those chips are going to turn into real dollars.
Sure. Well, it's smart to pay attention too, because now if you realize that two of the three people to your left are sitting out, you know, or not really wanting to get involved, then you can raise with impunity and just steal their blinds constantly and just constantly build your stack. And that every stack or every chip that you steal is more money in your pocket that way. So yeah, it's definitely pay attention to see who's playing and who's not.
Yeah, because the difference was last time in the double or nothings, you know, you got nothing else.
Yeah, you so just got
you
the
had
same amount.
7,000 in units, you're absolutely completely moronically more stupid than I am to enter any pot. Because there's no upside for you. But there's a huge upside in this one.
Yep. Yep.
All right, second thing I noticed is that you can be put to some really tough tests, and more importantly, you can put your opponent to some really tough test with some unconventional play. For example, it's tough to call a huge all-in when you have a decent stack and there are one or two really small stacks left at the table, right near the bubble. So let's say you're six-handed or seven-handed, a couple people with 400 in units, you've got like 2,500. You've got another opponent that's got like 2,600. And he pushes all in. All
right.
You know, are you going to call there, lose this thing, and get nothing when you've got a couple short stacks that are going to probably go out and you're going to lock in at least a little bit of profit? Or are you going to try to gamble with this guy and chip up? So being the aggressor puts a lot more pressure on the people after you to make those kind of decisions, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting because you talk about when you're playing a tournament, you're playing to win. You know, so, yeah, people want to just get into the money. So it's just sort of like a microcosm of a real tournament, though, you know, in that, you know, if you want to win the most money, you need to have the most chips. So is it all about winning the most money or is it about winning some money back? You know, it's an interesting dilemma.
And then finally, the last thing I noticed in my very statistically sound sample of two tournaments is that you have to be particularly careful near the bubble. There was the first one I played, there were seven players left. I fortunately doubled through with queen. Next hand, the two short stacks were eliminated in the same hand, Chris.
Right.
Tournament's over, boom.
Jeez.
I got the payout. Had I not had that well-timed double up, it would have cost me about $4, which turns out to be a lot in a $5 buy-in tournament.
Right, that's like almost your whole buy-in.
And what was funny, though, too, is I was, you know, I was doing work, as I always do, you know, emailing in the background. And then, bing! I'm like, tournament's over? How did that happen? But it's very easy to do it. You get a couple short stacks, they both get it in, and you get somebody that calls them, boom, the tournament's over. And, you know, I kind of think of it, I'm trying to think of a good example, but there's times, some board games I've played and things where you kind of, if you shut people out, you actually win. Because you're closing off the game for them.
Right.
You know, people are, oh, I still got some time to gather more dollars or houses or whatever it is that you're playing. But if you're able to end the game, boom, you wield a lot of power. So,
Is there an instance in this sort of format where people are, like, scrambling at the end? You know, it's kind of like when they know the tournament's going to end at midnight and...
Yeah.
They're only paying three spots, and you're in fifth, and you've got no chips, and you got to keep going all in no matter what you have. Is there that kind of feeling at all? Like, you're seeing the short stacks constantly shoving because they need to get money, or people are, I don't know, I'm kind of trying to imagine a scenario where it looks like it's frantic, even though you can't make it.
Yeah, you know, the two I played last night, I didn't see any franticism. but, you know, the real difficult thing, I think, is it's not so much. These are easy to play if you are the short stack with like 500 units left. You know, you're folding, trying to fold into the money as much as you can. And they're really easy to play if you've got a bigger chip stack because you can continue to chip up knowing that you're not at risk of losing the tournament. Obviously, you can lose some value. I think it's much tougher to be playing these things if you're like in the 1,500 to 2,000 range near the bubble.
Yeah.
Because at that point, it's kind of important for you to chip up and get more value, but at the same time, you don't want to go out and get nothing.
Let me ask you this. I don't know this now. If you finish in the money, are you guaranteed to at least have your money back, or is there a scenario where you still lose money?
No, we'll actually find this out when we get to Will's hands, that you could actually finish in the money and get $5 back in a 530 buy-in.
Oh, okay. But you're at least getting like your buy-in back, not the... Juice,
right. You're guaranteed in a 5:30 buy-in. Okay. You're guaranteed at least getting $5.
Okay, because that also comes into play. If you don't realize that, you know, if you could make like a dollar on this or something and not $5, then you might be a little more adverse, or you might want to, you know, take a little more chances too. Because you're only going to win a buck anyway. You might as well start shoving at an earlier stage or whatever. So, okay, knowing that you're going to get at least your buy-in back essentially, then it's probably a different strategy. Okay.
Yeah, and I fully admit that these tournaments are probably great for people that are really good at math.
Yeah, probably.
Because you get down to the end there, I mean, you can quickly calculate, you know, you could probably even run a little spreadsheet in the background with the current payouts.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And know where you stand and whether it's worth taking a risk or not based on where you are now and where you might end up. Seems like a lot of work for me for a $5.30 tournament. Might be different for some of the bigger ones, but I mean, I don't think you have to be a math expert to kind of know, pick your spots and know what you need to do.
Right.
But I found them immensely enjoyable, and I appreciate Will for sending them in because I've seen them and I just never had the time to actually play them. And of course, you know, hey, I gotta do it for the show, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had to play a few last night, and like I said, I cashed them both. So, and man, I think I finished second in both too. So I got some decent money out of them.
Cool. Very cool.
So I'll be back doing them. Next week, I'll let you know that I went on a 0-for-10 streak. And I'm now broke, and I'm going to need you to transfer me some money.
Well, you know, we did talk about that a little, too, before we decided to do this as our main topic. And I really don't recall very many times where I play in a sit-and-go and I don't make it to at least fifth. You know what I mean? So it seems like every you know, group of people you sit down with, you're usually better than at least, not better than, but you usually do better than half the table. You know, I don't ever remember going out first in a sit-and-go, very rarely. So these do seem profitable if you know what you're doing.
Well, you know, I found it really changed my normal sit-and-go strategy. Normally when I play a sit-and-go, and I don't think I'm alone in this, I think there's a lot of other people that play this well too, you try to play tight at the beginning, let the knuckleheads knock each other out, knowing that eventually the blinds are going to get so big that, you know, you can win one or two hands off of one of the remaining knuckleheads and propel yourself into the money or to win it.
Right.
But this tournament, you don't, you know, the clock's ticking in a sense.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
Once it gets down to those five people, it's out. So you can't sit back. I mean, you can sit back and play tight if you just want to eke into the money, but you're losing a lot of value by doing that.
That's
so
true. Yep.
I found myself trying to be a lot more aggressive early on. And I think in both tournaments, I was lucky enough to win a few hands early on that got me up high enough that I could continue playing that way. Whereas before, I might just, you know, fold a lot of marginal hands and, you know, wait to the end.
Very cool. So now these hands that Will sends in and his stuff, these are for $5 tournaments that he entered, right?
I think they're $5. You know, I believe he said that they were $5.
Yeah, they are. They're $5 tournaments.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good, too, to know that he's playing on a buy-in level that most of our listeners and even you and I would probably, to experiment at least in the beginning, play at. So that's cool.
All right, well, here's what he wrote to set these four hands up that he sent us in. He said he's played a number of them. He's done very well so far. In the last four, his payouts have been 12, 16, 50, 16, 50, and 23.
Wow.
Remember, these buy-ins are 524, so he's more than doubled up in his worst cash.
Yeah.
And almost more than quadrupled up in his top one.
Wow.
So you can make a lot of money off of him. So you only have to outlast five people for this, and the standard sit and go with 50, 30, 20 payout, and you must beat nine players to get $25, eight players to get 15. If you beat seven players and collect $10, it's not even double when you consider the rake.
Right.
Interesting way to look at it. And then he says also that these tournaments have lower rakes, too.
Right, because it's 5 plus 24 rather than
five plus 50.
Yeah. So that's half the rake.
All right, so... then he said that he had a reasonable run of cards in one of these, been aggressive, putting pressure on the smaller stacks, and also the people that he pegged that may call light. He says the blinds and eights get very high, so stealing or just shoving and winning blinds is very profitable, and we'll see that in one of the hands here, too. So that's one thing to remember. I did notice, I think, obviously they have turbos and non-turbo versions of these, I think, so you have to be prepared. But I did notice the ones that I was playing, Andy's kicked in pretty early, and the blinds did get up pretty high. So I totally concur with what Will's saying here, is that one more reason not to be passive towards the bubble.
Right.
And I think this is going to be illustrated in the first hand that he sent in. This is at the 150-300 level, and our hero is the chip leader with 5,300, nearly 5,400. And he has ace of hearts, jack of hearts, and he shoves all in, Chris.
Holy cow. Everybody is he first folded? To act?
He's second to act.
Okay, one person folds, and he shoves.
Went all in, everybody folded, and he collected 1,030 from the pot, and he said that 1,030 increased his stack by 20%, simply by going all in and winning the hand right there.
So how does it 1,030? He didn't collect 1,030, though, because they're adding his 300 in that, because it's only 450, and then the antes are 40, so that's only 400. So that's only 850. So it must be that his call's in there, too, right, then? So really only won 800. Barely 800 for that.
400, 700, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah. That's smart, though, because you think about how big his stack is, 54, and you win 800 on top of that, now you have 62. When you're paying money per dollar or per chip, that's a huge increase in cash right there alone.
Well, yeah, and the percentage would be a lot higher if it was one of his other opponents that did this move and won it.
Yep.
You know, that second in chips at this point was 1,800, so...
2,100.
So 2,100.
Yeah, so 2,100. And even if he gets called by somebody who has 2,100, he still has, 3,200 chips if he loses. So, and he's still probably chipping.
Yeah, but my point is, if let's say that he had folded here preflop, which you're not going to do with ace-jack, but let's just assume he has, and one of the other players made the same move and won, the percentage increase in their chip stack is higher than his would have been.
Right.
Because they have fewer chips,
right.
So... one of those things to think about. And again, like I said, I mean, I don't know how many people we have left in this hand at this point. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Seven people.
Seven. So, I mean, we're two off the bubble. And most of the chip stacks here were in the 1,100 to 1,700 kind of range.
Right.
And that's where I was talking about before. It was real difficult. You know, if you're one of those people, it's real difficult to call an all-in at that point. Because if you double up, you're not going to get that much more value, and if you're out, you lose nothing. So, no more thoughts.
Well, I'm reading the hands while I'm just trying to see what could have been damaging for his move there, and really, there's nothing there. That's it. It's a good move. No matter what happens, he's still chip leader, and they have to face. This is when the big stack is really really important. Like in a regular tournament, you know, you don't want to go against a big stack if you don't have to. Blah blah blah. But in this case, it's really, really vital. I mean, he can really just keep shoving with impunity,
absolutely,
you know, with any decent hand, because they're so even in stacks that, you know, they have to wake up with a really good hand to call you, and he just keeps increasing how much money's going into his pocket, really. So that's a great move right there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the worst thing that could happen is he becomes second in chips.
Yep.
You know, because he would drop down to 3,100, and you know, if the second stack called him, then he would that player would move it to 4,500.
Yeah,
and you have ace jack of hearts, which is not a bad hand either. So even if you could call, you could probably win too.
Yep.
So one more testament to not only being aggressive but being hyper aggressive there, and see what happens. I mean, you take one shot at it. I mean, you don't want to do it after that, probably. But
right.
All right, hand number two. Our hero is up to 6,000 now. He open shoves with queen jack here, Chris.
Wow.
And he says he knows the most likely call is from the guy who only has 940 chips after ante and posting. He says if that player folds, he collects another 1,000. If he calls 10-10 or lesser pair, I'm racing for 2,000. When I only lose 1,000.
Right.
And the chance that he has a better pair or King X or Ace X is small. As it turns out, in this situation, his opponent did have Ace X. And as he says, since it starts, the lesser hand wins, which is great for him. So he wins his all in.
Wow. So he paired up and took it down. Holy cow. Yeah, that's the other thing, too, is even if you're wrong, You still can hit your cards. You know, you don't have to be right and guess that they're all going to fold. You can still hit your cards. So, wow. Yeah, that's pretty bold, though. I mean, again, it's almost the same scenario. You're the massive chip leader at this point. And even if somebody calls you, it's not going to damage you too much anyway. And Queen Jack's a pretty damn good hand, you know, when you're only playing six or seven handed anyway. I mean, it's not the type of hand you want to play if you're playing a full table and under the gun, but... in this situation, sure, absolutely. So, yeah, he's really wielding that big stack.
Yeah, and I think this hand illustrates, you know, really paying attention to, more so than you would normally do in a tournament, players and what their tendencies are and where they are at the chip stacks.
Yeah.
I mean, we see a lot of this, some of the great strategy columns that have been running in our magazine, whether it's Lee Childs or Jonathan Little or those folks. You know, a lot of them talk about when you get to that level of pro versus pro, they know what they can call and what they can't call. And they know what their opponent knows that they can or can't call there.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the exact same situation here. If you know that some of these people are like, you know, hey, I'm just not going to be able to call here unless I have a really strong hand, then you're just pushing it and pushing them away.
Right. Plus, you know, it's just, and even though, I mean, this is a quick sit and go, so he may not be able to know these people as well, but he knows the situation well, and he knows,
yeah. You
know, so that's another thing that plays into it. You know the situations and know what people have to do and what they can't get away from. Always pay attention to their stacks, and very, even more important in this kind of a format.
All right, so our third hand, he says, this is where, in his opinion, it gets interesting, and he thinks he played this so perfect.
Oh, geez.
He's okay. Channeling Chris Cosenza.
His face sounds like me.
All right, so he says he has a king jack of diamonds here. Let me make sure that's suited king jack. And he's got somebody that makes a push here. And he says, by the way, he's been playing, which obviously he's been pushing every pot here. You would think an instant call, but he folds. So let's take you through the hand here, and we'll see what he means. At this point, he has 7,700 in chips. Remember, we're six-handed now, so we're on the actual bubble. One more goes out, and this thing is over.
Yeah.
Second in chips at the table is 1,590, so a commanding lead here at this point.
Yeah.
And our hero is in the small blind. The short stack of the table raises all in for 1,238 and folds around to us, and we fold.
Is that because there's another shorter stack in the hand? Because there's a 1,100 chips in here, too.
Yeah, and that's what it is. The big blind was the one with 1,100 chips right behind him.
So he's getting out of the way to let that guy probably call.
Yep, and he ended up calling, and that stack wins.
Yep. That's smart.
Now, his reasoning here is that at over 7,000 chips, I'm protecting my stack here. The big blind can't fold, he says. The shover knows this and has seen me playing many hands. As the shover has more chips than the big blind, there's a good chance he can knock him out, and I can guarantee myself a good payout as we will be left with five, and it's over with.
Right, because if it happens right there, he's locking up 7,700 worth of chips into this formula that they have.
Massive,
right? Yeah. Rather than calling and then losing, and then one other guy getting knocked out, and then you've lost 1,300 chips from that, and it still goes to the money. So why take a chance of going to the money with less money? So I would fold too. That's a great, it's a lot of thinking involved there. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And you got to do it pretty quick too. I mean, it's not like you got, oh, sorry guys, give me a minute, you know, and call a tournament clock. I mean, you got 15 seconds to act, really, and then push the time button. But other than that, it's you got to really be thinking on your toes about what's going to happen in every situation, every hand.
Well, I think it's a real microcosm of what we talk about normally. You know, you want to be the one raising, not calling.
Right.
And it's the same situation. I mean, he wields that big stick when he's first to act and can put the pressure on somebody else. But you don't necessarily feel the need to be table captain in these things. I mean, when you're the big stacks and feel like you need to knock people out.
Right.
You know, let other people make that decision, and particularly knowing that, as he said, the big blind was behind him, and at this point with the blinds the way they are and where they're going, was going to have to call. So, you know, sit back and be a spectator.
It turns out too that he would have rivered a pair of jacks on one, knocked them both out. That would have been interesting. And I wonder now, does the person with the most chips still get the money like they would in a normal tournament?
yeah, we'll see that in the next
hand. That happens. Okay. Well, I didn't know if that happens if somebody is in fifth, but they get knocked out, they still get the money, but.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he would have made a ton of money if he had won it too. But still, I think we talk about this all the time. Even though it would have turned out to be the right move to call, it's actually not the right move to make overall. So.
All right. Well, here's the last hand of the tournament, and he says it's a clear case of someone not thinking this through, which is very interesting to watch in these. I didn't see these necessarily myself last night, but I could definitely see how these situations would come up.
Right.
So remember, we're six-handed, one more person out, and this thing is over. Our chip stacks are 1,700, 178 in C4. They know the player that lost that last one, right?
Yep.
So he's in with anything pretty much at this point. Then a 1,482, a 1,540. We, of course, are the chip leader with 7,400. And then the big blind that just, or the old big blind that just doubled up has 2,600 now. All right, so the short stack obviously is all in here. He calls all in, folds around. We raise all in as well.
We raise all in.
At this point, just, hey, we'll be the one to take him out. And, you know, if we lose, we lose, you know, 128 in chips. A little pocket change here. Unfortunately, the next person to act, which is the person who just doubled up in the last hand, also calls.
Wow. Wow. So he's going to risk 2,370 and making money for someone who might get knocked out with any two cards, 178. That's crazy.
All right. Now, the short stack that was almost forced to call with anything had queen of clubs, jack of hearts. We shove with four of spades, jack of spades. And the big blind that called behind us, ace of diamonds, king of diamonds.
Oh, man. See, now this reminds me of the mailbag, you know. I mean, clearly you're going to call with pocket aces in the mailbag scenario. But here, even with aces, I might even lay it down just because I know I'm going to have the second most amount of money in this tournament, 26-20 in chips. You're second in chips if the 178 gets knocked out. So why even take a chance of making just a minimum?
You know, I would fold four aces here, Chris.
Yes, yes. And then even if the 178 survives, now you make no money. That's crazy.
Well, the board ran out eight of clubs, nine of clubs, four of diamonds, nine of spades, two of hearts.
Yeah, so four.
Our hero hits our four, wins it, knocked out, tournament's over, and wins $23.02. Very nice.
Wow.
And the guy that called us with the ace king finished fifth place and gets the minimum $5.
I'm not sure what Will's going to say about this now, but there is some sort of argument here for the call, just because if he does win and the guy gets knocked out, he actually gets the most amount of money, because he'll have 6,000 in chips and Will will have 3,500 or whatever it is, so 4,000.
Uh-huh.
So,
all right.
You know what I mean? So there is sort of an argument of, I want to win the most money, not just squeak into the money. And if I lose to 178, I'm going to squeak into the money anyway. I mean, he'll have the second most amount of money, though. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a reason for doing it, but I don't think it's good enough in this situation. If the 178 gets knocked out like it did, he would have made the second amount of money, most amount of money, than behind Will. So, I don't know. I mean, I can see, hey, it's a $5 tournament. I want to try to win $20 today, not $5. And I could see that, but he also risked winning nothing, too. And that's too
well, but it's not so much 23 versus 5. I mean, it was the second most. I mean, I don't know actually how the how it would have played out here
with
what he had.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, but I don't know if ace, king of diamonds is the hand that I want to take that stand with.
I don't know. That's, I mean, it's a good hand, but no, you're right. If you know you're going to make the money, you're going to make the second most amount of money if this 178 gets knocked out, and you just move on and play another one after this. Why take the chance of getting knocked out with the big stack in the hand? You don't know what he has. He could have anything. If he has a pair, you're racing for your money rather than not having to. So, yeah, I would have folded. I'm just saying, I think there is, someone can make an argument for calling there. So,
well, certainly this player could probably make an argument for it. All right, well, this is the final analysis from Will here. He said the short stack had 128 chips. The guy behind him who called at 2,600 and was the second highest chip stack.
Right.
He said the hand before he was on life support was 660. He got lucky his weak ace held and quadrupled up. So really, I mean, he's, I guess, you know, you're playing with house money, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is wrong always, I think, but... now he says, Will says his play is simple. He has a big stack. He shoves the steals blind. even if he's drawing dead, he can only lose 128 chips here. Actually makes a profit when he loses the hand to him. Because conversely, the ace-king hand was the worst he's ever seen. He says, why call and risk elimination when the short stack has 128 chips? He has the second highest stack will be paid second money, which is what we talked about.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So he goes from the second chip stack and a reasonable payout to $5 because he gets none of the remaining 50% of the prize pool. And since he paid $5.24 to get in this tournament, he actually ended up losing 24 cents on this tournament. So, you know, you're going to see me playing a lot of these. Well, not a lot of these. As much time as I have, I might be playing. Because they actually went pretty quickly, too. I mean, that's the other thing I like about them. Just like the Double Nothings, where, I mean, you're only trying to get rid of five people and you can turn them around. So,
yeah, it's not like it has to play to the end. It just has to play to five people, so that's half the time, easily.
So even if you just want to play one at a time and really focus on it, you can get a lot in a short session.
Yeah.
The really funny thing, too, is I played two of those, went pretty quick, you know, won the money, and then I was getting ready to get into another one, and I noticed that a $12 limit hold'em was 8 of 9.
Oh, geez.
I'm like, oh, all right, I'll get in that. I'll mix it up a little bit, get into that thing. Talk about going from a cheetah running to a turtle with a broken leg. Wow, that tournament took forever. Fortunately, I ended up winning it, so I that was my biggest payday of the night last night. But,
oh, geez, that's good.
Man, night and day there, too.
Wow, that's so pretty good.
Certainly turn around a lot of these 50-50s rather than the normal sit and goes.
So it made up for limping under the gun with aces.
Hey, I worked that worked out for me too.
Well, that was really cool. That was, and I guess, to recap, really, some of the things that you want to take into consideration is always pay attention to the chip stacks of everyone around you as to what they're going to have to do on the hand, right? That's one good thing to keep in mind. Plus, also keep in mind that, if it looks like you're going to be in the money by folding, don't look at big hands as hands you have to play. It's like treat it like a super satellite at that point and just sit back and let someone else get knocked out if calling means your tournament life rather than just chipping up, and stealing a lot of blinds and stuff can be profitable as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Good.
I think the more you play, the more you'll realize how the payout to work and stuff. I mean, obviously you can figure it out as you go, but I mean, you get a sense of how things happen and know whether you should be gambling or not gambling in certain situations depending on your chip stack. So I don't know, it's one of those great exercises that it's not just poker you're playing, you're playing math and situations and things.
Well, Will, thanks for sending this in. This was pretty cool.
This is Joe Seabach and you're listening to Any Up.
All right, going back to the bar leagues, Chris, for the hand of the week this week.
Yes, the free leagues. The smoke. Love the smoke.
Always a lot of fun stuff happening in bar league. And they're always more fun to analyze, I believe. Because you got people that you just don't know if they even know what they're doing in these.
No, you never know. You never know.
People sending them to us obviously know what they're doing and obviously are getting frustrated at times. But I don't remember. I haven't read this hand for a while, so I don't know whether that's actually the case here. But comes from an old friend, Jay Herkey.
Yep.
He loves playing these bar leagues, does really well in them. You can win a lot of good prizes in these things, too.
Yeah, some of them. They have seats to World Series events, overnight, three-night trips out to Vegas or whatever. Some good stuff in there.
Certainly can't lose any money in them.
No, that's you can get drunk and lose money that way, but you can't lose money playing poker.
No, you just tell people, hey, I'll get the round next month. I'm a little light this month. And then you keep doing that. It's legal English shoot, I think. All right, so he says it's a bar league free roll, obviously, as we did. It's a third level. He has squiggly 16,000 in chips.
Okay.
He is under the gun plus 3. Blinds are 100, 200.
Okay.
All right. I don't know, obviously, how many other chips people had or what they started with, but
it's a bar league. We don't have a printout of the hand history printouts available at the bar.
That would be awesome. But obviously, if the big blind's 200, we have 16,000 in chips, so right. We got a lot of play left here.
All right,
under the gun plus 3, we get the king of spades, 10 of spades. It doesn't say what happened before him, but I'm assuming people folded, so we were first to act.
Okay. I don't know. I never know if these bar leagues are shorthanded or whatever, too, because a lot of times I remember when we first started playing those things, having fun with them, I was playing at tables of like 3 people. So I don't know.
Right.
It's tough. I don't know where he stands in this hand as far as how many people are in the hand, so I would fold it if I was playing 10-handed. So, I don't know. Where are we again? Are we like any?
We're under the gun plus 3.
Under the gun plus 3. All right, so that means there's at least 6 or 7 people at the table. I don't know. I don't know, Scott. I'd probably fold his hand. I'm sorry. It's just only asking for trouble. Even if you make a flush, you're not making the nuts unless the ace of spades is on board. So,
well, yeah, we're a little bit at a disadvantage because we have a lack of information about the overall hand here. But I will say this too: when we talk about these hands of the week, we always try to talk about them in the particular situation that they are, and not in general overall poker knowledge.
Right.
As Marissa Tomei would say on My Cousin Vinny.
I think I would probably fold, but if I'm going to play, I would probably play it for a raise. I don't like just calling here.
But what I was going to say there is that in bar leagues, you get a lot of people that play, I wouldn't say necessarily any two cards, but overvalue naked kings, naked aces, things like that, because they have a king or ace in.
Right.
So in a general poker setting, King 10 is a hand that I would easily fold, for the most part, even suited.
Right.
But in this situation, I might be able to pick up a couple weak kings along the way, and my King 10 could actually be good if I hit a king.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not buying it.
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, again, end of the gun plus 3, so I guess he's got enough players at the table that if he's first to enter the pot, I'm going to want to come in for a raise here. Limping does nothing except give people with position behind me to call. And, you know, any two cards that they're going to get. So I'd like to at least try to raise and thin the field a little bit with it if I'm going to play it. So I would make it like 600 if I'm going to play it. But
I think it's still standard even bar league or anywhere else. If you first went in, you should be raising.
Raising, yeah.
If you can't raise, then you should think about folding.
Yeah, so I was thinking about folding, but if I'm going to play
one, and that I listen to.
Well, like you said, if I want to fold it, but if I'm going to play it, it's going to be for a raise. I'm not limping with King 10 of spades.
All right, well, our hero does limp.
Ooh.
You know, he's new to the show. He's only listened to us for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it's since the beginning.
And the hijack also calls. The big blind raises to 600, and it's back to us.
Well, that shows you right there. The big blind only raises to 600 with two limpers, you know, so should have made it at least 800 or 1,000, maybe even more. So, yeah, I want to be the one raising with this hand, not calling a raise with it. Right. So again, I'm folding it.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree here. At this point, you know, we lost our opportunity to really take charge of this hand. And at this point, I don't know what the big blind has because I want to raise in 600, but King 10 is just so vulnerable, and we got another player in the hand too.
I mean, I know we have a ton of money, and so you know, 600 means nothing when you have 6,000 chips. 16,000 chips. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you got a ton of money there, and it's early on in a free tournament. So maybe you want to try to catch somebody who doesn't know what they're doing off guard and really take all their chips or whatever. But I just feel like I'm still trying to play sound poker. When I play in these bar leagues, I still use them to try to make sound decisions. And to me, it's not a sound decision to limp with this hand, and it's not a sound decision to call a raise now, even if it is. I mean, I guess he's getting, you know, enough on his money to make a 400-unit call. Now that there's 600 and then the blinds, the small blinds in there too, so 700 and then you're two and two. So, I mean, you definitely have a sound decision now to call, but I would, in a real tournament, I would fold, you know, but then again, the race probably wouldn't have been the 600 in a real tournament, would have been more. So,
well, you're a good point. Well, I mean, we're really deep and, you know, maybe we flop a straight or flush draw or something like that and, you know, get some good implied odds after that, you know. And what's it really going to cost us?
Yeah.
600 out of 16,000, another 400 actually, because he had,
yeah.
So out of 16,000,
you're getting like 3 to 1 on your money. So I guess I would call just based on that, but essentially, I mean, I don't even want to be in this hand unless I was the one raising. So I'm just prefacing that before we go to the flop.
And definitely looking for a good flop out of this too. I'm not looking to flop a 10 or a king,
right?
At least both, if not much more,
right?
All right, so we do call. The hijack calls as well, too. So we go three-handed at a flop of King of Diamonds, 10 of Clubs, 6 of Diamonds. So we flop top two pair.
That's pretty good.
With two diamonds on board. And the big blind bets 2,500.
Wow. Wow. That's like way more in the pot, right?
Yep, 18, that's more in the pot. Now, again, I'm not picking on these bar league players, some real sharp ones there, but again, it's the beginner. A lot of these players are beginners, so
yeah.
Proper bet sizing and stuff is, you know, way beyond the level that they're at now.
They usually
just look down and pick a couple chips up that look pretty to them and put them in.
Really wish I knew what the big blind had for a chip stack, but I mean, I can't imagine. I have no reason to call here. We have a person behind. I would shove. I can't call because somebody could easily have Queen Jack here, right? Easily have Queen Jack. And if the guy raised preflop, we're hoping he has Ace King, and we're going to get all of his money, and he can't get away from it. If he bets that much money, he's almost committed anyway. I would just shove here.
Yeah, it's a good point. It'd be nice to know exactly what he had. Because, I mean, any legitimate raise that we put in is going to be a good chunk of our really big stack.
Right.
So why not just make it too tough for him?
Yeah, I would just shove. And if he calls, maybe he's got ace-king or queens or, you know, king-queen or something like that. So the only thing we're afraid of really is a set. So, and even then, we have outs if they have a set of sixes. So I would just shove here and get the hijacker out of there.
All right, well, our hero decides to call.
I don't like that. I mean, queen jack, you know what I mean? What about queen jack? What about king queen and then a queen turns? You know what I mean? You want to get
diamonds.
I forgot about the diamond draw, too. It's a diamond draw. I forgot about that. So this is a really coordinated board. I don't like the call at all. I need to re-raise and get somebody out, and hopefully the pre-flop raiser now can't get away from his hand with, like, ace king. I can't see just calling here.
All right, well, our hero says it's a nice flop for him. The dude bets into the pot. I love that. We're playing with dudes. he says he thinks about raising since this is a pretty coordinated flop and hits a lot of a range of hands that someone might raise or call or raise with. But doesn't really explain why he doesn't.
Yeah, I just can't see. I think a call is a bad decision there. I'm not picking on Jay Herkey because he's one of our favorite listeners. I'm just saying I feel like you need to get people to define their hand or get out of this hand, and we have the best hand probably, and the only thing we're trailing to really is sixes and pocket sixes. So I don't know. I just can't see letting that other guy come along, and I don't want the big blind dictating this hand, and I'm hoping that he has a hand like aces or ace king and that we've got two pair and we're going to knock him out too. But I don't know. What you don't like the call, do you?
No. I definitely am raising here. I think we got lucky here. We hit top two. We got somebody betting that obviously has some kind of hand, I would think, and I want to let him know that we have a better hand.
Yeah, absolutely.
And certainly with a third player in, I don't want two players drawing the straights and flushes against me.
No, and like I said, when we first started talking about two, I even forgot about the diamonds. You know that somebody's got the suited ace of diamonds in their hand. You know what I mean? They're not going anywhere, so you want to make them pay. So.
Well, even imagine this. What if the next card is the ace of diamonds? Now ace king has his beat.
Yeah.
The diamond draw got there, and the straight draw got there.
Oh, that'd be the most terrible card ever on the turn.
Yeah, I just don't want to see it against two players. So I want to at least get one player out of here. I'd be lovely. I think it'd be lovely to take down the 2,500 plus what was already in the pot. That's a nice little bump to my stack there.
Yeah.
Get it done now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we called the hijack calls. Oof. And so we remain three-handed. And the turn is the nine of clubs now. So our board is king of diamonds, ten of clubs, six of diamonds, nine of clubs.
See, that doesn't help. That's bad. That's a bad card. Puts another flush draw up there and completes the queen jack straight. So that's a terrible card for us.
Good thing is the big blind checks now.
Well, even so, I'm still worried about the hijack behind me. What's he calling with? You know, what did he call with before? So, man, this is brutal. Well, we still have top two. We got to put a bet out there, don't we? And we can't just check and let somebody, all these draws get there for free, can we?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. So they bet 2,500. That was 7,500 plus the original. So there's almost 10 grand in this pot. And we only have about 13,000. You're going to bet, if you make a decent-sized bet, it's going to be 50% of your stack anyway. Man, I would probably bet. Hey, jeez, this is terrible.
Yeah, this is what happened by just calling that big bet on the flop rather than raising at that point where we were a lot more comfortable with the bet.
Yeah, because now if you bet, a normal bet here would be like 7,500, but that's 50% of your stack. And they always say if you're going to bet 50% of your stack, you might as well shove. But if you shove and you're behind, you're out of the tournament now because you let them hit a straight.
And again, it's a bar league too, so people are going to, hey, I want to see it. I hear that a lot these things.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be tougher for people to lay these hands down. And, if you get one of them that's on a diamond draw, one of them on a club draw, and they both call.
Yeah.
You're dodging all kinds of outs, not counting whatever else they have in their hand at this point.
All right, well, I have to bet here. I can't not bet with those draws out there. And, you know, it's too narrow of a range to put somebody on exactly queen-jack, I think, to not bet. So I'm probably just going to shove. I mean, I really am. I mean, what point do I make by betting, like, I don't know, 5,000 or, I mean, really. Yeah.
Well, the pot's a little less than 10,000 right now, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even, if half the pot is 5,000, you know, that's just so much of my stack. You know, if the pot's 10,000 and we bet 5,000, it's half the pot. We only have 8,000 left. I guess maybe a 5,000 unit bet's a lot. But even then, if somebody's drawing to the nuts here, they're probably not going to lay it down because they're getting 3-1 on their money.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it depends on their chip stacks, too. I mean, if everybody's as deep stacked as we are, 5,000 probably isn't going to help.
Yeah. So, I mean, shoving
or all in is going to make it tougher. Yeah.
Committing suicide. One or the other I'm doing. I guess I shove here. I guess I just shove to protect and let them try to hit their one-card draw on the end for a huge price.
I'm going to have to agree with you.
Okay, cool.
All right, well, our hero bets 4,000, which were all his yellows, Chris.
All his yellows.
And he says, in retrospect, that was probably too little.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I don't know what that accomplishes, really, other than you're building a pot for a draw to stick around, really, because 4,000 is not a lot. Especially, again, we don't know what these people have in chip counts, but, you know, if 2,500 didn't make anybody go away, and now the board's gotten even more scary, you know, I don't know. If somebody shoves on you now, what do you do? Do you fold?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, I don't know. I don't think that's enough to bet. I think I have to shove or check. And if I check, I'm giving them infinite outs to hit and beat me. So, it is a scary hand. I would have played it totally differently from the beginning to end, so.
Well, as he said, in retrospect, it's probably too little. He says, sometimes when he's playing live, he lets the chip denominations I have dictate my bet, which is really a mistake. But if this makes you feel better, Justin, I think a lot of people do this.
Yeah.
In fact, actually, that's what I did at the hand at the top of the show. I'm like, yeah, it's just easier to throw a pink 500 in rather than make the proper 450.
Yeah.
Bet. And so, yeah, I see this a lot in the bar leagues, too. They look down and, oh, yeah, I've got 4,000 unit chips left. That sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, you're still going to make the proper size bets there. So. Now, what he goes on to say is, anyhow, I still need to bet here since that 9 doesn't change a whole lot.
Well, it depends.
The 9 changes a lot, in my opinion.
Queen-jack right there. I mean, think about it. If somebody has queen-jack, let's say the hijacker has queen-jack, which is a very plausible hand by the way he played it. He limped with it, which is something he might do in the hijack seat. And then the almost min-raise, it was obviously a 3x raise from the ridge, but still, for him, it's like a min-raise now when it gets back to him. So queen jack's plausible. Now he's open ended, and he's getting the pot odds to call after a $2,500 bet and call. So 9 completes that hand there, and so it's not that it doesn't change anything. It's just that it is such a narrow range that you have to put somebody on to not bet. So, and if you don't bet, then the other ranges that are more opened up, like suited diamonds or suited clubs, may come along now. So you're giving them infinite odds to hit their hand. So. I don't like the 4,000 bet, but I also don't agree that the 9 didn't change a lot. I think it did change.
All right, well, the hijack calls, but the big blind folds, Chris.
Oh, my God. Wow, that's
all right, we'll pause here before we finish the hand. I'm trying to figure this out, all right? So this, and I know it's almost a futile effort to try to figure out bar league poker at times. But he raises 3x with two callers from the big blind, which is not a good place to be raising unless you have a strong hand.
Right.
Flop comes, he overbets the pot.
Yep.
The turn comes a 9 of clubs, which, you know, we just got done saying that the 9 does change some things, but from his perspective, I don't think it changes as much as our perspective.
Yeah.
And he checks, and then folds to a bet.
Wow.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say the 2,500 bet was probably a mistake. We obviously have no idea what he had, but...
Yeah, we don't know. Good.
Betting that much, I mean, I think he was trying to overbet to take it down at that point.
Jeez.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, well, so we're heads up, going to the river, which is the ace of spades. So our final board is king of diamonds, 10 of clubs, 6 of diamonds, 9 of clubs, ace of spades.
Jeez, that's a really bad card for us.
And that's exactly what our hero says. but our remaining dude has 725 in chips left, Chris.
Yeah, that obviously there's nothing you can do now. It's weird that he just calls a 4,000 bet.
Yeah,
when he's only got 4,700 left, why he didn't get it?
Yeah, you leave a little bus fare behind, you know. You make a little... Well, I mean, I'm joking there too, but seriously, I mean, you know, maybe, you know, there might be a chance where the guy or a scare card comes and I don't know, the guy doesn't want to bet. You know, it's barley. You never know what's going to happen.
I know, but the blinds.
There's no reason to put
two.
The extra 725 in if there's a chance that you might be able to keep it if you lose.
Three and a half big blinds. He only have three and a half big blinds left though today.
Yeah, but still, you have chips.
Yes, I know, short stack ninja. Get off it, all right? It's three and a half big blinds left. That's it.
You have chips. I mean,
the bar league. There's another one at 10:30. He's going to play in it again at 10:30. Who cares? Put in the 725, for God's sakes.
Oh, man. I strenuously disagree. I don't do it. Disagree. I strenuously disagree.
Short stack ninja. Wah! Going to turn 725 right. into 1500, then go broke with pocket aces.
Touche, touche. All right, well, our hero looks over to the 725 that our opponent has, and he taps him, Chris.
Oh, I love it. Taps him. I'll tap you, yep. Teddy.
Our opponent thinks about it for a minute, calls with nine of diamonds, ace of diamonds.
Oh, man. Oh, that's harsh. Harsh. Runner, runner, two pair, bigger than our flop two pair. That is harsh. Oh, man.
His last word, jackwagon.
Well, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. I wouldn't call this guy a jackwagon. He had the nut flush draw on the flop.
That's true.
And you didn't raise to get him to narrow his range of hands, and you didn't bet enough to get him out or make him. You know what I mean? I wouldn't call him a jackwagon. He had the nut flush draw on the flop, and he had to easily the pot odds to call after those bets of 2,500 and a call. You know, on the turn, he picks up a pair and the nut flush draw, and you only bet 4,000, and you only had 4,700 left. I don't call him a jackwagon. I think that he got lucky, or he got very improved.
Variance caught up to him.
Yeah, I mean, that hand makes sense now if you think about it. Surprising that he didn't raise with it, actually, preflop, but... again, it is bar league poker, but to call the hijack a jackwagon to me isn't right because, you know, he had the right odds to call preflop once the guy only made it 600, and then after the flop, 25 and 25 bet and call, he's got the odds. That's the great odds for his one overcard and nut flush draw. Then he picks up a pair and you only bet 4,000. So I think if we played it differently, we'd have either gotten him out of the hand or at least gotten him all in, drawing very thinly, and you know, to just a flush draw at the time. Either way, no matter what you're doing, you're losing, you know, your money to this guy. So
yeah. Wow. Well, I think it was probably more a boy. Can you believe my luck / variance?
Yeah.
Jackwagon.
Yeah.
Jackwagon comment. Not what are you doing in the pot, jackwagon? Jackwagon. Very different jackwagon.
I love how we're. It's like the fourth definition in the Merriam-Webster's dictionary of jackwagon. This is the version where the guy got lucky on you. You call him a jackwagon. Love that.
But yeah, you're right on the flop. You know, the big bet, big blind bets out 2,500. We make that, you know, even 5,000 to go or something like that. You know, this guy is probably out, I would think.
Yeah, or if he's Chris Cosenza, he shoves with his draws. So.
That's true, too.
So he calls anyway. But, yeah, I think it's going to be hard to get a guy off a hand in a free bar league when he has a nut flush draw and one over. Even so, you might have gotten him off free flop, or you might have gotten... Actually, to be honest, let's go all the way back, rewind all the way back to the beginning of the movie and fold King 10. Let's fold King 10.
All right, yeah, very good point.
It's really the best way to save your money here, because I don't know if you're going to be able to save it once that flop comes out, no matter what you do.
But here's the other thing, too, and we're focused just on this one hand rather than overall issues, which obviously
right.
we should. But there was nothing worse that could happen to us by betting more on the flop. We ended up getting all of our chips in.
Right.
Regardless.
Right.
And if we got them all in then maybe he would have folded at that point.
Yeah. And even then it's tough. You know, a bar league where you, let's play it back now. You had 725, 47. 57, 67, 70. So he had about 8,000 to start the hand. So really, if you bet 2,500 and then you shove for you know, I mean, he may actually just call that anyway. So,
well, yeah, but that's the benefit too. You want
to. No, I know, and I know you do.
He's making bad odds.
I know you do. Yep. I'm just saying that you probably can't get him to fold no matter what you do, but at least you know you made him make a mistake and you're playing the correct poker. Yeah, exactly. Yep. So, tough hand, tough break, but really, he wasn't a jack wagon.
Oh, Jay Herky, we appreciate you sending this in. You didn't win the hand, but you also not getting any swag.
Oh, slap, slap.
Already have swag, and but you learned a valuable lesson.
Absolutely, don't play Barley Poker unless you're willing to.
Or don't play King Ten in Barley.
Get emphysema and play King Ten on a position.
You know, some of them are in non-smoking establishments.
I know, but not when it's Barley. No such thing as a non-smoking Barley. I mean, that's
that's not true. There's a couple around here.
There are
like
okay.
one or two token ones. Yeah, you know, like albino squirrels. You know, there's a few out there,
and they get a nut once in a while too.
All right, but everybody else, send your hands of the week or your mailbag submissions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'd be happy to offer you some wonderful swag, something maybe like a deck of J Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Antiup, which are now available in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
And you may get something even more valuable, like being our main topic. Thanks, Will from Australia, for sending that in today and saving our butts, because we really didn't know what the hell we were going to talk about this week.
And please send us a map of Australia so we know who you are.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
We'll see you at the tables.
Antiup is a production of AntiupMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.